Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films, Week 5 edition, Buck Rising. Happy to be back here with you. Greg, a lot happening in the NFL. Some news today with Stephon Gilmore, end of the Carolina Panthers. I was surprised to see, I guess the situation in New England has been coming for quite some time, given that he wants a new contract, but I was kind of surprised to see him end up in Carolina. How about you?
Well, we hear all the time that you never have enough corners, and I guess Carolina has taken that statement extremely seriously.
Right.
Because when everybody's healthy, they certainly have a lot of corners and a lot of good corners. And Gilmore is the kind of guy you bring him into your cornerback room, and you hear this a lot, Buck, as you know, about, hey, it's a good quarterback room. It's a good receiver room. You know, so now you have Stephon Gilmore, who is as competitive as there is and is a true professional in the way he goes about his business. And now you have him working with C.J. Henderson, who's a gifted player and likely needs a little more professionalism and maturity as a player, but the traits are there. So now you have Gilmore, who's certainly not old. You have Henderson, who was a top 10 pick a year ago. You have Horn, who will come back, who's a top 10 pick this year. You've got A.J. Boye, who's been a solid pro. And I know I'm missing one more who's solid, but, I mean, that's a pretty darn good cornerback room, and they can put a lot of players on the field.
Yeah, when we started this podcast, Greg, I didn't think that we would be talking this much Carolina Panthers, but, like, I mean, should we just declare the Panthers the team of the install podcast? Is this now the team that we're watching week in and week out?
Well, it'll be interesting because, obviously, they just lost to Dallas in a game that was relatively closer than the final score, and I watched the tape of that game. But, you know, look, every team starts a season thinking they're going to be good and they're going to win games. But realistically, my guess is, as the coaches sat around at night having their scotch, they probably weren't thinking they were winning the Super Bowl. So they're trying to build. And, you know, obviously they have a very young receiving core. They have a young quarterback. If he can stay on the field, they have a young running back who's a top three running back in the league. They need work on their O-line. But this is a defense now that's really building with speed, with coverage ability. They can rush the quarterback. So we'll see where they go. But this is an intriguing team to watch moving forward. It likely won't be this year, Buck, but it'll be just for someone like myself who sits and studies tape all day. I think they become a very intriguing team to put the tape on.
There's no question about it. So, Greg, a professional as always, transitioning for me, because speaking of teams that expected to win a lot of games before the season, let's talk about the local professional football team. Took one on the chin in New York, or rather East Rutherford, over the weekend. Greg, I mean, with the Titans right now, they have myriad injuries. They are without their top two wide receivers, even though as we tape this on Wednesday, A.J. Brown did return to practice, and we will await the injury report to see whether he was a full or limited participant. But let's start with the offensive side of the ball. They could not pass protect. They could not generate separation with the wide receivers that were available. And the New York Jets went in there and smacked them around. But I want to take a look at those three red zone series that the Titans had on their first three offensive drives, where they wanted 21 and they came away with 9, having to settle for field goals against the NFL's top red zone defense. What did you see from the Jets on Sunday?
Well, I think when you look at those kinds of things, you have to look at individual plays. It's easy to look at the result, Buck, and say, gee, they had red zone issues. But for instance, on the first possession, on first and 10, when they got to the red zone, they called what a lot of teams would call. They called a fade to the boundary X receiver, okay? A lot of teams call that, particularly when your boundary X receiver is 6'3". Mm-hmm. It was a beautifully thrown ball. It was a tough catch, and Reynolds has to make that catch. So, you know, you can't look at a play like that and say, oh boy, they've got red zone issues. Now, obviously, there was a sack then to end that possession. I personally believe, watching the tape, I think that Williams, who was the sacker, I think that he actually had McNichols in coverage and made a mistake and just saw a lane open up and said, you know what, I'm going for it. And he did, and there was no one there to account for him because McNichols free released to that side. So that play ended that first possession. So then you have to start looking at the next possession. There was a red zone sack that ended that possession as well. And I thought it was a function of the Jets doing a really good job defending the three-man route concept to the wide side of the field, and the ET stunt, meaning the end goes first and the tackle loops around, and the ET stunt broke down Lawan, who worked too far inside with the end, and he allowed Williams, the looper, a direct path to Tannehill, who then had to move, and Franklin Myers cleaned it up. So that was a specific play there. Then they tried the same on the third red zone possession. They tried the same boundary X one-on-one situation. This time they did it with Batson, who, again, he's a smaller receiver, so you would not necessarily think of him as someone that you would probably want to match up one-on-one on the outside. They did it against Hall, the corner, who's much bigger. That was a back shoulder throw, and that was incomplete. So, you know, it's and there were some runs mixed in there, which you know they're going to do. Right. I mean, there's no reason to discuss those. Of course, they're going to give the ball to Derrick Henry. That's not a bad play call to give the ball to Derrick Henry. They've only given it to him 96 times in the last three games. So it's not really a bad play call at this point. So, you know, I've always believed with those kinds of situations, Buck, you have to look at individual plays. It's like when people say he throws too many interceptions about a quarterback. Well, you have to look at each interception as an individual entity and see why it occurred. A number on a page doesn't tell me anything. Just like 9 versus 21, sure, that's not what you want, but just the those two numbers on a page or on a computer, they don't tell me anything.
Yeah, Greg, you're asking people to have nuance, and you know that is not something that we are capable as a sports fan society of being able to do on a regular basis, particularly when the local team loses to a team that was at the time winless. But if you've been paying attention to the New York Jets at all, you know that they were not losing because their defense has been an issue.
Well, one other point I'd make, there were obviously 7 sacks. 5 of them came on third down.
Yeah.
A couple of those sacks were on Tannehill, not on the offensive line, where the ball, he had a throw within the timing and structure of the play design. And for whatever reason, only he can answer this. I can't answer it, but he can. And he just didn't turn it loose. And then he got sacked. Because keep this in mind, when you call quick game throws, meaning 3-step drop timing, even if it's from the gun, the timing of the drops and routes is still 3-step, 5-step, 5-step, 7-step. It just maps out a little differently because the quarterback's in the gun, but the timing is still the same. So if you have a 3-step timing throw, that's not a full field read. That's right. Not, hey, let's look here, then come back here. No, that's not the design of that kind of play. So the ball has to come out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think there were two of them in which the ball should have come out. And if the ball doesn't come out, because it's not a read per se, the quarterback gets stuck. And he got stuck twice, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And that was actually for some reason, I have an odd amount of Dolphins fans in my life, and they were texting me about Ryan Tannehill that looked very much like a Ryan Tannehill Dolphins performance of old. Of course, much different situations.
Right.
But something that's been coming up as of late, Mike Vrabel and Ryan Tannehill after the game spoke to that effect as well. He at least understands that some of the problems were on him, but why he went through it the way that he did, he wasn't able to necessarily discern or wasn't going to tell us.
Sure. And again, there's always little things and tweaks and things that coaches know that I don't know. You know, if you're not in the room, in the meeting rooms, if you're not there, you don't know all the little things. I mean, I sit and watch the tape, and I probably know a decent amount here, but I certainly don't know what they're discussing in the meeting rooms. But right now, there's two main issues with their offense, and they're really important. They can't generate any explosive plays in the pass game. I mean, they had one 20-yard completion to a wide receiver, and that came this week on 3rd and 21. So yeah, it really wasn't that big a play, relatively speaking. And the second point is, they're struggling to score in the red zone, which we just spoke about. So when you put those two things together, it's really difficult. I mean, right now they're a condensed offense built solely on the running of Henry, who's averaging 32 carries a game in the last three games. That's a tough deal in today's NFL, Buck. That's a tough deal. And this is no knock on Henry. He's a great, great back. but that's just a tough, it's a tough way to go.
Oh, and the Jets had no issue going at Derrick Henry throughout the course of that game. They were some of the most, Quincy Williams was giving him the business on a regular basis. And that secondary was pretty adept at tackling him before he kind of broke loose in the second level. I forget, number 40's name escapes me, but I thought he saved a touchdown in that game.
Gavelin Guidry.
Yes, he made an incredible play to keep Derrick Henry from doing Derrick Henry things as that game wore on. And on the other side, they keep giving up explosive plays, Greg. They got 9 plays that have gone for 30-plus yards throughout the course of these 4 games. So their issues are multifold right now, and they could use some of their best talent.
Yeah, this was an odd game. You know, it's funny because Zach Wilson had 2 big plays. He had the 54-yarder on 3rd and 6 late in the third quarter to call, which, again, it was a second reaction movement throw. It was a big-time play by Wilson. Then, of course, the 53-yard touchdown to our old friend Corey Davis was another play where another second reaction play that just showed the confidence and throwing ability of Wilson. Those plays, to me, are really hard to speak about in terms of, you know, problems. I mean, obviously they count, and that's 107 yards worth of play, and one of them's a touchdown. But you know, those are, to me, those are not issues with the structure of your defense per se. I mean, those were just big time plays by a quarterback that's capable of making those kinds of plays.
Yeah, I think that the only reason that fans are frustrated is because they haven't seen Zach Wilson do too much of that until such time.
Right. And
by
the way,
the Tennessee Titans.
And it's funny you say that, because in all honesty, the note I made about Wilson after I watched the tape of the game was he made a few outstanding throws / plays in this game, but he still had issues with ball placement. He missed too many throws he must make routinely. So, you know, those plays were big, obviously. Mm-hmm. And by the way, plays like that become magnified when your offense doesn't score, which the Tennessee offense is struggling to do. But I didn't think Wilson overall had a big time game. So, you know, we'll see going forward.
Yeah, certainly. Let's kind of stay there with the rookie quarterbacks right now, Greg, because I think we've talked about Wilson enough, unless there's some more observations that you'd like to get to. But going back to Thursday night football between the Jags and the Bengals, Jags obviously, you know, blew a 14-0 halftime lead, probably should have been 21 with just a little bit extra push from Trevor Lawrence on that carry on fourth down, where they had the turnover on downs. But he played mistake-free football, no turnovers. It was probably as clean a performance as we've seen from him thus far. And it seemed like the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville was finding ways to utilize his legs as a means to move the offense. James Robinson was a big part of that as well. What did you kind of see from the Jags, and particularly the young quarterback, that allowed him to flourish a little more than we've seen lately?
Yeah, and I understand they're just trying to win a game, and they're trying to do anything they can to win, but I'd be careful about those running plays with Lawrence.
That's exactly what I thought.
He's kind of a stalk-like build guy. He's not, you know, if he starts running and trying to take on guys with his shoulders, he's going to have a little bit of an issue going forward. But I think he's going through the learning phase of throwing with timing and anticipation and innately understanding what open means in the NFL. I thought, though, that this game, he looked more comfortable overall. My sense watching the tape was that he showed incremental but clear improvement. Even some completions, he's still just a beat late. I think that'll come. So the question is, we'll see if he can build on it. Now, keep one thing in mind. It was the first game that they had a functional and volume run game with James Robinson, and that's also a factor. You know, I don't know if you saw this statement by Brandon Staley after the game. I don't know if it was after the game or the next day, about the value of run games. And if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to sit here and recite it, but needless to say, he talks about how valuable the run game is. You should go, and people listening should go find that statement, because everybody now speaks about the NFL as if the run game is irrelevant and doesn't matter.
I'll see if our producer Will Bowling can put this in as a part of the podcast, because I have seen the clip and I think it's very much worth for the audience to hear as a part of this conversation.
What I think that the running game does for a quarterback is it gives you some breathers, and you know, you don't need a good running game to be a good play action team, but what you need the running game for is the physical element of the game. There's a physicality to the game that's real, right? If you're just a passing team, okay, there's a physical element to the game that the defense doesn't have to respect, okay? And that's the truth, okay? Because the data will tell you, you don't need a run game to play pass. That's not, you don't need that. But what the running game does for you, it brings a physical dimension to the football game. And what the running game does that the passing game does not is the running game forces the defense to play blocks and to tackle. That happens on a run play. You must play blocks and you must tackle. In the passing game, those things don't have to happen, right? You don't have to play as many blocks, right? And you may not have to tackle based on incomplete or not. So what the running game does is it really challenges your physicality. And that's why I think the run game is important to a quarterback, is because it's going to allow him literally to have more space to operate when you do throw the football. Okay, it's not that you need the run game to throw it. It's just what it gives the rest of your skill players.
Yeah, and I think it's really important. And so my point being, getting back to Lawrence, and hopefully you can find that and people can hear it, is, you know, when you have a functional and volume run game, that really helps in many different ways. And so that was the first game this year where that was the case. So we'll see if they can, if Lawrence can continue to build on his incremental improvement, and we'll see also, Buck, if they can continue to have a run game that has value.
Yeah. And it seemed like they almost, and maybe this was just a recency observation or a recency bias observation from my part, Greg, but it felt like they kind of got a little away from James Robinson throughout the course of that game after using him so frequently throughout the course of the first half and allowing the pass game to be a supplement of what they were doing on the ground.
Yeah. I mean, look, obviously they lost the game, but if you notice, he only had 24 pass attempts. Now, they didn't run a ton of plays relative to a normal NFL game, but you'd much rather Lawrence be in the 25 to 30 range in pass attempts than in the 40 to 45 range of pass attempts.
Yeah. So Justin Fields is now the new starting quarterback in Chicago. We got a little extended look at him. It seems like Matt Nagy, all his bluster about Andy's the one, Justin's the two, and Foles is the three, has since changed course since Monday. Now, we won't get hot takey and talk about Matt Nagy specifically, because no, I know there were a lot of opinions being had about him.
I will say this. Here's what the tape showed. That's Please. All I'm going to tell you, what the tape showed. The Bears still featured five-man pass protection concepts and quick game throws, just as they did the week before.
Yeah.
The difference was the throws were there. They were more defined. And Fields was under less quick pressure against a much less defense than the Browns. And that allowed him to be immediately decisive with his throws. Now, the other thing that they did do, which was different than the week before, and obviously this was coaching throughout the week, is they did increase their play action concepts. And play action, the way they did it, they would have six man and maybe even a seven man protection. I can't remember, but that allowed him to be protected on deeper drops and drive the ball down the field. He's a very good thrower of the football. He's got a big arm. He made a couple of really big time throws. Now, some of them were just basic reads, but that's okay. That's what you're trying to do with the young quarterback, Buck. You're trying to just give him basic reads. You know, you're not asking a young quarterback to make a full field read. Hey, if you don't see it to the trip side, then I want you to come back to the other side. You don't really do that. You don't want to do that with a young quarterback. So I thought they did a really good job in terms of they still, like I said, they still featured the five-man protections. They just worked this week, but they added, you know, a bunch of play action. And he made some very good intermediate and vertical throws.
Yeah, that was exciting to be able to watch him and see him kind of feel his way out throughout the course of that game. Greg, before we touch on Mac Jones and then to what Bill Belichick was doing against Tom Brady on Sunday night, I've just received the Titans injury report. There's 8 guys who did not practice and 21 total players on this injury report to the Jags 4. So the Titans not necessarily in a good way right now for the audience.
So are you going to suit up this week, Buck? Are you suiting up this week?
Buddy, they may need me to play left tackle because they could use some help at this point. I don't know if I would be any better at getting in the way than anybody else right now.
Is Lawan on the injury report?
Taylor is most certainly on the injury report. He left that game for a couple of snaps on Sunday, and he is listed here with a toe. I know he was hobbling around pretty good. He did try and finish that game, but that is a new injury for Taylor Lewan.
Oh, come on. He's got nine more, so what's the difference?
maybe a little bit of balance, which turns out is important for a left tackle in the NFL. All right, back to Mac Jones and the Patriots offense, Greg. They just seem so limited, and I know the Bucs defense up front particularly makes it damn near impossible to run the ball. I mean, the Patriots were right. Super limited. They're not getting quite what I think they envisioned with all of the free agent additions that they did go out and spend big money on. Mac Jones is being asked to do as much as he can, and their pass game seems to be, you know, what Bill Belichick has always done and what Josh McDaniels has always done. It's almost a function of the running game to move the ball the way that they do. What are you seeing from the Patriots right now on offense?
Well, I think Mac Jones is playing very well, given, number one, what he's being asked to do, and number two, what he is right now.
Yeah.
Mac Jones is not a big-armed guy. Mac Jones is a guy that plays very decisively. He gets the ball out. They're all short throws for the most part. There have been a couple of throws this year that have been one-on-one matchups, whether it was a real wheel route to James White, who's, of course, out, or whether it was a slot fade to Jacoby Myers, you know, throws like that, which are not arm strength throws. But the ball comes out. He has an innate feel in the pocket without question. He has a very good sense of pressure, where it's coming from, and how to avoid it without breaking down his fundamental technique. That's a really strong point in his favor. That's something he showed at times at Alabama as well. He just can't drive the football at this point in his career. Now, I think there have been quarterbacks whose arm did get stronger as they matured. I personally thought Drew Brees' arm got stronger as his career progressed. Obviously, the very end, it was less. But, you know, in his true prime, I thought his arm had gotten stronger than when he first came in the league. And who knows, maybe the surgery on his shoulder helped that as well, you know, when he had that early in his career. So maybe Jones' arm with just strength can get stronger. But he clearly knows where to go. He's precisely accurate. As I said, he has a feel for the pocket. He's just limited in the kinds of throws you can ask him to make.
Yeah. On the other side of the ball, we know Tom Brady to be anything but limited. And certainly Bill Belichick tried his best to limit him with as much as, I think it was 57 seconds left on the clock when Tom Brady got the ball to set up the game-winning field goal. What did you make of that matchup, Greg, for all the different looks that Bill Belichick was throwing at a quarterback that he knows intimately well?
Well, you know, he threw a lot of different front looks at, and it's not just Brady. That's also the offensive line when you throw many different front looks and a lot of inside stunts and inside pressures, because that's where you want to attack Brady. You don't want to attack him from the outside. He'll just step up in the pocket. You want to get into his stepping into his throws. That's what you want to take away from him. So they did. The multiplicity came from their fronts and their pressure concepts. Basically, their template in terms of coverage was cover one. It's man free. They did it behind four and five man pressures. And that's basically what they did. It wasn't a case where, oh my God, look at all these coverages. Wow. Were there a couple of times did they disguise with late movement? Yes. But I remember talking to Dean Pease two summers ago, and he told me, and he was with Belichick, and Dean Pease has been doing this a long time. He's one of the best in the business. And he said, with quarterbacks that are really smart, and he specifically mentioned at the time Brees and Brady, he said, all that disguise doesn't really work. So I'm sure Belichick knows that. And therefore, yeah, did he disguise a couple of things? Yeah, but not a lot. Now, where he showed more combination coverage concepts and different coverages was in the red zone, in the high red zone between I think he views the red zone as the 30-yard line in. Most would say the 20-yard line in. But that's where you started to see the different coverage combinations. And then you saw that as well in the tight red zone, which is the 10-yard line in. So that's where you saw some of the different stuff. But for the most part, he played cover one. He played man free. And they had specific matchups. They had Jackson matched on Evans. They had Mills matched on Godwin, and they had Jones matched on Brown. Those were the matchups pretty much all game.
It was so much fun to watch. Now, Greg, I know you typically watch film on Sunday nights. Did you watch this game live?
Oh, I don't watch film on Sunday night, believe me. I'm usually, asleep at a reasonable hour. I watched it live until middle of the third. And then, just because I get in every morning by about 5:45, Buck, I can't stay up till 11:30, 12 o'clock. Yeah. I can't start my week with 4 hours of sleep, you know?
You're sick, but we love you for it. We greatly appreciate it.
Well, everybody pretty much knows that, Buck. So that you just did not give a scoop there. That's pretty well known.
I assume that you're a big fan of Adele for all the promos that were running between Brady and Belichick that Sunday Night Football did. Greg Cosell, noted Adele fan, yes?
I can't say I'm a big fan because I don't know a lot of her music. See, I'm one of those guys, Buck, truth be told, that I'm kind of stuck in this late 60s, 70s with classic rock. So, I'm familiar because I have two daughters with music, that exists now. But when it comes to what I really listen to and what I'm, super familiar with, I mean, I can talk, 70s classic rock all day.
Okay, we'll save that.
I can't talk Adele all day. I mean, do I know some of her big songs? Yes, but I certainly can't, have an intelligent discussion about Adele and her music.
We'll save the classic rock podcast for the off season. How about that?
But I can talk about Led Zeppelin all day if you'd like.
I got you. Well, I'm certain that I'll see Greg Cosell front row at the Super Bowl rocking out to some Kendrick Lamar. But again, we'll save that for the music podcast.
Although I have to admit,
off season.
although I must admit, I do love Mary J.
Who doesn't? I mean, listen. If you don't, it's an indictment of you, and that goes for anybody listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals right now, Greg, the last undefeated team in the NFL, speaking of fun to watch, speaking of enjoyable, what are they doing differently right now, if anything, because they gave the Los Angeles Rams the absolute business on Sunday. I don't know why it was surprising to me after seeing what they did here in Tennessee. Maybe I just thought the Titans to be that much more less than, but they're doing this to teams regularly. Now, what kind of development are you seeing them from offense, and how much are they straying from what it is that we knew Cliff Kingsbury liked to do prior to this season?
Well, the one thing that he is doing that is really air raid based, which is his background, is they have the highest percentage of what we call 10 personnel in the NFL, Buck. 10 personnel meaning one back and four wide receivers. Almost 24% of their offensive snaps have come out of that personnel package. And Murray's been outstanding out of 10 personnel. Other than that, they do a lot of things that everybody else does. I think that Kingsbury is really good. I thought this past summer when I watched their 2020 tape, I think Kingsbury does some really good things with his personnel, his formations, his route combinations. I think he has a really good feel for attacking zone coverage with intermediate and vertical route concepts. I think the big difference this year is Kyler Murray. Murray has always been a big fantasy guy, and he's a fun guy to watch. But I don't think he was very consistent as a thrower, either as a rookie or in his second season a year ago. This year, he's been so much more efficient from the pocket. We know he can make those splash second reaction movement plays. He'll always do that. But I think he's been so much more efficient and consistent from the pocket, making big time throws. I thought the touchdown he threw to Max Williams this week, it was only a 14 yarder, but I thought that was so representative of his growth as a quarterback. He knew what he had pre-snap. He knew who he had to beat with the throw, and he threw it with outstanding timing and anticipation. That was one of those throws that just said to me, this kid's really getting better.
Yeah. I mean, he's as you mentioned, he's always been one of the more fun players in the NFL to watch. And it seems that he's really starting to develop in a way that's clear and obvious to everybody. And everybody else in the NFL should be terrified of that, because those skill position players that they've got alongside him. I mean, A.J. Green looked like the A.J. Green of old. They're getting stuff out of Max Williams in the passing game. It's really, really an enjoyable offense to watch. I know people here locally probably don't see a ton of Cardinals football, but if you have the opportunity to watch them on Game Pass or in the red zone, they're spending a lot of time in the red zone right now, so you can probably see quite a bit of Kyler Murray and company. Greg, looking forward to the games this coming weekend before we get to the Bills and the Chiefs, which is obviously the marquee, and I'm certain that the NFL matchup show this weekend with Sal Palantonio and Matt Bowen is going to spend some time on that. The Colts and the Ravens, a divisional rival for the Tennessee Titans, and a team in Baltimore that Titans fans have obviously a lot of history with. Certainly this franchise has a lot of history with. What did you see from Indianapolis, the connection between Carson Wentz and Mo Alie-Cox? It helped them get their first win in the win-loss column over the weekend against the Dolphins. What are you kind of seeing from Indianapolis right now as they try and climb back into this thing?
Let me answer it this way. Let me talk about it from the Ravens' perspective, because I think their defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale, is among the best in the league in terms of designing pressure concepts from many different looks, using many different people. You know, literally, any of the 11 defensive players could be part of a blitz concept with Wink Martindale. And I think when you look at the Colts right now with Quentin Nelson out, I don't believe Brady Smith is back either, the right tackle. I'm not certain of that, but I know he's been out.
Right.
So I don't know the answer to that. But the point is they have a depleted offensive line. They have Carson Wentz, who's fighting through and actually played well this past week against a pretty difficult defense to play against, but he can't move right now. So what I look for in this game is I would expect to see that those multiplicity of pressure concepts that Wink Martindale is going to throw out there. And I think that's going to be a problem for the Colts. You know, not just Carson Wentz. He's the guy who'll get sacked, but it's going to be a problem for their entire offense. And it's going to be a tough go. You know, they may try to play with two tight ends more of the game because that sometimes calms down pressure, you know. So we'll see how they go about it. But I'd be very surprised to see them spread it out because they're going to get pressure.
Yeah, you mentioned Dean Pease earlier in the podcast. I miss very much having Dean Pease here in Tennessee to be able to just talk to him about football because he's, as you noted, one of the smartest minds in this sport for a long, long time at this point. And he always spoke so highly of Wink Martindale and the creativity that he had after Dean Pease left as the defensive coordinator there. The marquee matchup at this point, the Bills and the Chiefs in Kansas City. The Chiefs get on the right side of the win Sunday against their opponent, finding ways to get their run game right. Their defense still a little bit of a problem right now. Buffalo has seemed to really find its stride since losing inexplicably to Pittsburgh. The more that we watch the Steelers stumble about on offense as Ben Roethlisberger ages before all of our eyes. Which approach are you guys going to take in the matchup show this week to talk about this game and dissect where the advantages lie?
Well, Matt Bowen's going to take a look back at last year when it comes to the Chiefs' O, because the Chiefs' O is still very good. And obviously these two teams played in the AFC Championship game that the Chiefs won. So Matt Bowen's going to take a look at that. I did not want to go back to that as far as the Bills' O Chiefs' D for this reason. The Chiefs' D is actually doing a lot of the same things they did a year ago in terms of tactics. They're just not playing very well. So it's a different Chiefs defense right now than it was back in the AFC Championship game. So I didn't think that merited doing a look back because, look, they're just not playing as well. That's the reality. They're not necessarily drastically changing their tactical approach. They're missing some people. Frank Clark's been out. He's their best pure pass rusher off the edge. To me, Chris Jones is better inside, but they've been playing him significant snaps on the edge as a pass rusher. So they're depleted up front as far as pass rush and just overall, and they're depleted at corner. So overall, they're not playing as well. So it's a different defense right now. Again, you know, we always talk about how a game looks in advance. This looks like a high scoring game, but of course, that's why they play them. And Josh Allen, the last 2 weeks, has looked like the Josh Allen of 2020. So he had a slow start with his first two games where his ball location was a little problematic, but the last 2 weeks he's back to what he was a year ago, throwing the ball extremely well. And look, we're dealing with, in my view, two of the three most purely physically gifted quarterbacks in the league in this game, Allen and Mahomes, and the third one I put in that category would be Justin Herbert. You know, I mean, don't forget Allen and Herbert are 6'5", 240. That's a physical trait. That is a trait.
Yeah, just, I mean, giant. And to speak as to what the Chargers are doing right now, they're so much fun to watch. That Monday Night Football game was really, really enjoyable. And their defense in Los Angeles, legit as well. The NFL Matchup Show, of course, will make you smarter before Sunday's slate of games. Make sure you DVR it on ESPN. Catch Sal Pal, Matt Bowen, and of course, our guy Greg breaking it all down ahead of Week 5 in the NFL. If you want to make Greg happy, leave us a review. Maybe ask Greg for some Led Zeppelin recommendations.
There you go.
That's the best way to make Greg happy instead of calling him an Uber driver. We'll leave some Led Zeppelin.
I'm sure many people think when I speak about football that I'm dazed and confused, Buck. You know.
And with that dad joke, we will get out of here.
I couldn't help myself. Sorry. What could you do? You know,
it was golden. Never change, Greg. Never change. I'll talk to you next week, buddy.
All right, Buck. Thanks.